welcome to another exciting, thought-provoking episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer, your host and guest hosting with me today. Back again, back so soon, our food writer extraordinaire, Keith Pandolfi.
I'm glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
You just got back from vacation, too.
I did. I went to Cape Cod, which is beautiful and amazing. And I haven't been there since I was about 9 years old. This is my first time back. And, well, I don't want to say how many years.
Because people will do the math.
Yeah, they'll do the math. But, yeah, it was a great vacation. Lots of fried clams.
I was going to say, what is the food writer's top item that you have to have when you go to the Northeast to eat? Clams, well, oysters?
Oysters are my favorite. So, yes, oysters. Wellfleet oysters. We were actually staying right south of Wellfleet, so we had plenty of those. Fried clams are just fantastic up there. Of course, a lobster roll. I have mixed feelings about lobster rolls. I think, what, $40 for a lobster roll?
I mean, they do pack a lot of lobster in.
They do.
I mean, usually, yeah.
But the ones I had up there were definitely worth it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'd say so.
You know, speaking of lobster rolls, I'm still sad that the Court Street Lobster Bar or whatever it was called.
Oh, yeah.
Closed.
Yeah.
Because.
Go ahead. Sorry.
You're right. It's at first it's a little bit of a sticker shock. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's basically a lobster meat sandwich, but it's lobster meat.
It is.
Now, are you a cold lobster roll guy?
I'm cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Me too.
I like the cold with the mayonnaise. My wife likes the hot with the butter. So, yes.
All right. Well, it's good you're here, Keith, because our special guests today from Grater's is Rich Grater, you know, carrying on the family tradition now for more than 150 years, and Molly Lewis, who is the CEO of New Riff, taking over the business from her father, Ken Lewis, who launched New Riff Distillery 11 years ago. Why both, you ask? Because they have collaborated once again on a New Riff bourbon Grater's barrel, bourbon barrel ice cream. And they recently selected the next single barrel of New Riff that will flavor the next batch. So we're going to talk to them about that collaboration. And I thought it would be good to have you in to do that. But before we go into special guest time, we have to touch on the news of the week. And the big headline, of course, is the all the aftershocks to the fight video that went viral from last weekend. And we're not going to rehash all the headlines here, but one particular reaction that I think is apropos to talk about with you here is that a list of noteworthy restaurant owners, including Brittany Ruby from Jeff Ruby's Steakhouse, you had family member from Montgomery Inn and other, you had Salazar, operates Mita's and is about to open his namesake restaurant where Saks used to be, wrote an open letter calling for city leaders to stop with the vague promises and do something significant to make downtown more safe. You cover restaurants. You're our food writer. You know these people. Were you surprised that they took that opportunity to make that collective statement?
I was a little surprised, given the timing of, you know, we're in the national spotlight for all the wrong reasons right now. And I say that because based on my own personal experiences as the food writer here, I am downtown a lot at night eating dinner. Now, my reservations are usually for early evening, 6 o'clock, let's say 7 o'clock. I usually park at a 3CDC lot downtown by Fountain Square. I've just never felt any sort of danger walking around downtown with my family, with myself. And, you know, granted, I'm usually home by 10 o'clock. I'm not out at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm not sure.
Which is when the fight.
When the fight happened. Yes.
Whatever you want to call it. Beat down, melee.
And obviously a lot of alcohol involved in that, too. So, I say this is just based on my personal experience. I've gone to Ruby's. I've gone to, you know, Anthony Siddick, who also signed the letter, his restaurants. I've never felt a sense of danger downtown. But, I understand why they wrote the letter. I just thought the timing was a little odd, just given, I don't know if it makes things look worse or look better for people who live here when you get a letter like that. I get it. I think that we would like to see more of a police presence downtown. That always makes people feel safer.
Right.
I get that part of it.
Yeah, so. I get that too. I totally agree with you. I am downtown a lot. We're sitting downtown as we record. You know, we both work downtown. I walk all around downtown. I feel safe. But I have not, you know, fortunately been in a situation where, and I think what's interesting about this particular fight that was captured on video and went viral, and now you have everybody using it as an opportunity to either, like the restaurant owners, you know, underscore what they've been saying for a couple of years now, that they're concerned about the increase in particularly youth on youth violence or unsupervised youth running around, guns involved sometimes. There have been a few like unprovoked out of the blue, attacks. Of course, very recently we had the kind of mugging and shooting death of a young gym owner. His widow, his wife, has been very vocal on social, calling for change. So it is a significant issue that needs to be dealt with. But it's interesting to me that this particular video, which, like you said, it was a crowd of adults, not youth. It was 3 a.m. after the music festival weekend and a lot of people out drinking and things like that. We still don't know how have all the details, but it appears to be a fight between two individuals that kind of spun out of control into this just awful scene. If you've seen the videos, I don't think that represents that particular video that, you know, now we have Vivek Ramaswamy, the Republican candidate for governor, coming in to hold a town hall. I mean, there's just, you know, these things take on a life of their own. It's what's fascinating to me is this particular fight captured on video, I don't think is representative of the long-term issues that we've had, that the restaurant owners have, you know, especially, you know, the Montgomery Inn is not on the banks, but they're banks adjacent. And so, you know, we've talked to business owners at the banks who have worked with the police to make some changes down there. There's a curfew down there. So lots has been happening even before this video. But it's just interesting to me that, you know, when do we reach the tipping point and why? And that one video, because of the viral nature of it and because how shocking it is to watch, it's a tough watch. It's a brutal watch, in fact. That might be when we look back and say, when did we really get, you know, it's not just the police. When did the community come together to address the safety issues? That's what our editorial page writer, Keith, Kevin Aldridge, wrote in his column, was that, you know, this was a terrible thing, but let's not waste the opportunity now that we have everybody's attention. So I would lump the restaurant owners kind of into that general category of this got people's attention for better or worse.
I agree with you. And I agree with Kevin on that. You know, the sad part of it is just how in this age of social media and hot takes and everything, this video was up and it is horrific to watch. And within 30 minutes, it became a political issue. It was everybody, you know, was sort of, you know, using it to score points. But I do hope that, despite all that, that this maybe is a wake up call. We've had a couple wake up calls this summer, especially with the the home invasion you mentioned earlier. One thing that I do think is a real problem, though, is break-ins at restaurants. And that's something I've been hearing about a lot. Those usually happen, again, between 2 and 4 o'clock in the morning. But that seems to be the biggest concern about restaurant owners that I've spoken to. There have been a lot of break-ins in Over the Rhine and downtown recently. So,
all right. Well, I think it's time we lighten the mood a bit.
Please
offer our audience some alternative programming here. The Inquirer is going to continue, obviously, to cover this. We have a lot of people working on all these various follow-ups and more to come. Accountability journalism on our part too, because you have elected officials. The big question of where is the mayor during all of this, since he participated in the last public safety committee meeting that was addressing this via Zoom. We even reported that. So anyway, we are going to set that aside for a moment. We are going to bring in our special guests, again, Rich Grader from Graders and Molly Lewis from New Riff, and we're going to learn about how this collaboration happened. I hope that we can get some inside information on all of that, because it's a pretty cool thing they did. So,
it sure is.
All right, let's do that. Special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. As promised, from New Riff, we have Molly Lewis, and from Graders, we have Rich Grader. Amazing. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
And of course, Keith Pandolfi with us, because you can't talk to Molly and Rich without having Keith here.
I appreciate ringer. That. Yes. Very excited to be here.
So I don't remember which local advertiser had this slogan, but it wasn't you, but it applies. When your name's on the store, you care a lot more.
That's a good one.
Do you remember who that was?
I don't, but it's absolutely true.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about, for those 4 or 5 people in the city that don't know the Graders story, tell us the Graders story.
Wow. It's the best ice cream you'll ever taste, period.
Period.
That's
end of story.
Of story.
Like a 8-word story.
Yeah,
I love it.
No, well, we're a family business. We've been making ice cream since 1870, so it's 155 years. And if you don't figure out how to do it right in that amount of time, you never will. But what we figured out is we did it right from the beginning. So we have an old-fashioned French pot process. We've never changed it. It's really made in small batches. A lot of people say things are small batches. That's marketing. We make it 2.5 gallons at a time, literally. Now I have 40.
And so how many French pots do you have?
I think we have exactly 41 French pots that are cranking out ice cream 20 hours a day, all week long. When I was a kid, we had 4. So instead of making a fancier, bigger process, we just do a lot more of the little process, and that's what makes it special.
And can I break in here? My friend, the editor of a Chicago magazine, a food writer, he posted something recently saying, "What the F is a French pot?" What is French pot ice cream?
So your question is, what the is a French pot?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
All right. The funny thing is, if you were 130 years old, that's all you would know. Because in the 1880s, 90s, that was the only way to make ice cream. Unless you made it at home in a bowl. And it is basically, at the time, they were cypress wood vats inside of which you put a metal pot, like a tinned copper bowl that was open at the top. And then you'd put ice, salt, and water in that wood vat, and that would be a brine solution gets down below zero. To get cream and sugar solution to freeze, you must be below zero. And back in that era, there was no refrigeration. This is why my great-grandfather was either brilliant or crazy, because who makes ice cream in an era without modern refrigeration and freezers? It was crazy. But he was a teenager at the time, so whatever. Either knew what he was doing or not. But that pot spins, and then you put 2 gallons of liquid in, and the spinning makes the liquid stick to the sides from centrifugal force, and then you gently scrape it off the sides. And that's a slow process. It's laborious, but what you're doing is what you're not doing. You are not whipping air into the product. Okay. Modern refrigerated ice cream made in, I think, 1926, the modern ice cream machine came out. It works in a horizontal tube where you can actually dial the amount of air that you want to blow into the ice cream. It's why there's a standard identity for ice cream now. To be ice cream, legally under federal law, it has to be 10% butterfat and, get this, no more than 50% air, which means most modern ice cream has up to 50% air. And if you see something called frozen dessert on the shelf, that means it's got more than 50% air.
Well,
Grater's
okay.
has no air whipped into it.
All right.
That's a
air is
pot.
Cheaper than sugar and cream. And
air is a great ingredient to use, but it's you know, modern methods spoiled ice cream. And but it was cold and it was sweet and it was cheap. And so it was made and mass produced. It put all the little guys out of business because there was no big ice cream. You know, with that refrigeration, nobody's making a ton of ice cream. But as the modern processes came out, as refrigeration came out, as mass production came out, it put all the little guys out of business, except for my stubborn great-grandmother who said, no way. And she really innovated. The only place in the world where she innovated growing that process. So she bought up all the stores that were going out of business and made more French pot ice cream and supplied them. No other city did that happen. And so Cincinnati's lucky in that regard. And we're lucky because we have this great ice cream.
So it's basically like how you make ice cream at home.
Pretty close. Little better than making it at home. That's at home, it'll get a little icier, but yes, it's basically the same process.
And of all the big ice cream makers in the country, are you the only one still doing the French pot method?
We are the only commercial ice cream maker in the world doing this method.
Wow. Okay.
The world.
Okay.
You might find a few folks that, like, some chefs can have a similar machine. They'll make it in the back room and that'll be their dessert that night. No one's doing it at scale.
Okay. Another quick question. Where was the first Grater's location?
When my teenage great-grandfather was making it, it was in a street, I think the Sycamore Street Farmer's Market.
Oh, wow.
And then I think there was a couple of storefronts downtown. The first one that I think of as the real progenitor of modern Grater's was 967 East McMillan Street up in East Walnut Hills,
okay,
which is a short walk from where our current corporate offices are. So when they moved there when the Gilbert Street streetcar was put in. Mm-hmm. So yes. Everyone thinks of the inclines. Cincinnati also had streetcars like San Francisco. The streetcar brought people up from the downtown basin up to Walnut Hills to make Walnut Hills sort of one of the first really tony neighborhoods back in the 1880s. And we moved with that streetcar. And that store was still there as a Grater's shop until I think 1974 it finally closed.
Oh, wow. And is it still standing?
Unfortunately, no. It was. It's right in between. There's that secret bar was in the
comfort
video
station.
Now it's down the street from that.
Oh, okay.
The video archive, and then there was another barbecue joint next door. Mm. And in between them is this open spot, and that's where our first store. That's where they made it in the back room, sold it in the front room, and lived upstairs, which is what everybody did back then.
Yeah.
You never left your labor. There's probably three other people doing the exact same thing we were on that same street.
It's like Bob's Burgers. You ever see that show?
I'm aware of it. I did not.
So we've got the Grater's story established.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you, Rich.
Yes.
Another family business, not quite 155 years old, but like, what, 10 or 11?
Yes, thank you. We just celebrated our 11th anniversary, so we've been in business for 11 years. Thank you. But, you know, we actually can, especially is a entrepreneur and family business.
Your father?
My father, Ken Lewis. We've been in the beverage alcohol business. He was in the business for over 40 years, coming up from Louisville. And even my grandfather was in the discount clothing, discount goods industry with a small liquor section in his part of the store. So we don't have the five generations behind us as the Grater family do, but we do come from a line of innovators and beverage alcohol entrepreneurs.
And people would know your dad is the founder of the Party Source.
Yes.
And you explained to us that if you want to be a distributor, you can't be a retailer. So that was kind of the birth of New Riff, right?
Sure. Well, the alcohol business is tricky and every state is different, which makes it even more complicated. But there exists a system called the three-tier system, which doesn't allow a supplier, a producer, manufacturer, a retailer, or a distributor to be the same ownership. And so when we dreamed up New Riff in 2008-2009, Ken was the owner of the Party Source. The Party Source was doing very well. And he had the vision to turn it into an ESOP, which I always love to point out. For those of you who don't know what an ESOP is, it's a employee-owned option for the company. It's certainly not the most lucrative option for the family selling the business, but the value system was there. It really changes the lives of all the employees who are becoming owners of the business, and it really was in line with our family values. So it was an exciting thing to do at the Party Source, and it enabled us to build New Riff from the ground up.
Talk about that process.
It was a really exciting process. I remember sitting around the dinner table in 2008, 2009, and, you know, Ken and had this crazy idea along with Jay Arisman, who was the fine spirit buyer at the Party Source at the time. And they thought, let's bring back serious bourbon production to Northern Kentucky. You know,
your dad, no experience being a distiller.
You know, Ken, I
didn't
refer
matter,
to him as
but
Ken.
Yeah.
He's an
Let's
entrepreneur.
Let's establish that. Like, it wasn't
And we are very.
It wasn't like your great great grandmother, grandfather was in the ice cream business and you just carried it on. You were just like, okay, we're going to make bourbon in Newport or Bellevue, right? Are you
in Newport, Kentucky?
Yeah.
Right.
Bellevue,
no,
yeah.
We
that
are.
Sounds like he maybe was like my great grandfather, who was crazy enough to do something he never did. So, hey.
Yeah, maybe so. There's so many other parallels and similarities.
Well, 155
you know.
Years from now, we'll still maybe be here.
No, we're very transparent. We didn't have granddaddy's recipe under the bed. You know, we're proud of that, actually. We are very respectful of the tradition of bourbon making in the state of Kentucky. We are just putting our own riff on it or our own spin on what's been created. Well, thank you. And, you know, it's exciting. It's fun. It's fun to take a tradition and do your own thing and innovate. So it's been an exciting time. But
11 years, that means now people can actually get a 10-year aged bottle of New Riff.
We did.
Like
do,
you've grown up.
We've grown up. We're toddlers now. We're not babies. You know, we're still very young when it comes to whiskey and being in the whiskey industry, but we feel that Cincinnati has truly embraced us as their distillery, our distillery, which we're very proud of. And we've come a long way in a short amount of time. We don't have any 10-year-old available currently in the market. We did do a big whiskey club release, our spring whiskey club release, which was a 10-year-old whiskey, bourbon and rye. But we sold out quickly. We do have an 8-year-old that is available in stores all over Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, and some of the other states in our distribution. But it's limited as well. But we will continue to make older product. We hold back about 30% of everything we make. So
here's where all the bourbon aficionados are starting to geek out now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Including you
and my son.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really exciting because our distillers are the first to say, we don't know when the peak will be with our whiskeys. You know, it just keeps tasting different and it evolves and the flavors change, but we're watching out to see what that moment will be. We've got a long runway, we think.
Well, we have to talk too about the aquifer, which is not just the name of your bar lounge above the distillery. It's essential to what makes New Riff, New Riff.
Thank you. Yes. Well, the aquifer has two meanings in that case. The aquifer is our bar and tasting room on our third floor of our distillery, right in the same parking lot with the Party Source. It's an opportunity to showcase everything we've ever made. So not only our core items, but also all of our whiskey club releases and limited offerings. We do flights. We do all kinds of really world-class cocktails. I want to give a nod to our cocktail program and our hospitality team, especially Catherine Manabot, who is our director. She's really upped the game over there. And it's a great place to come for a cocktail before dinner or before going out, and a really interesting place to learn about bourbon, too, and the history of Northern Kentucky.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
We've been there.
Yeah. Yes.
We're going to get to that in a second. But it's also...
Thank you. Yes, you teed me up. It's also, we have an alluvial aquifer that runs under our distillery. So when we were building the building, we're very transparent. We had initially planned to use municipal Newport City water. We were very shocked to find out that 100 feet underground, under the base of the distillery where it is now, there's literally an alluvial aquifer, which is very mineral rich, has a lot of calcium, limestone coming from Kentucky, headed towards the Ohio River. And so to date, that alluvial aquifer runs our entire distillery. Our distillery runs exclusively on that very hard, very mineral rich water.
Wow. And that was just serendipity that it happened to be there? You didn't know anything about it when you first got the idea?
I mean, no one believes us, but it was serendipity. It was, wow. I call it kismet. Yes, yeah, it was an unbelievable discovery. And really, I call it our secret weapon for why our whiskey tastes as good as it does, even at 4 years old. We won't release anything until it's four. But even at four, we feel like the water has a big, big part.
I think your aquifer with your copper column still is your French pot.
It's our French pot.
There's a lot of similarities. Yeah. And I was laughing when you were talking about, I had no idea that to be called ice cream, it has to be 10% butterfat. Not to put Molly on the spot, but bourbon has a very strict percentage involved for you to call it bourbon.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So in order to be called bourbon, we have similar restrictions. Mm-hmm. It has to be 51% or more corn. And rye, too, to be called American rye whiskey, has to be 51% or more rye.
And then you do both. You do a bourbon, you do a rye.
We do. I mean, we are a Kentucky bourbon distillery first and foremost, but we actually mash more rye than any distillery in the state of Kentucky. So our bourbon is very high rye. Okay. We use 30% in our bourbon, and our rye is 100% rye. So it's 95% rye, 5% malted rye, and then we do malted rye and lots of other offerings. So we've really fallen in love with rye at New Riff.
All right. Now, listeners might be wondering, why are they together on the same podcast? You decided to form an alliance, I'll call it an alliance, to create Grader's Bourbon Ball French Pot Ice Cream featuring New Riff. Yes. How in the hell did that happen?
Like, well, we call these collaborations.
Yeah, mashups,
collaborations. Collaborations are fun, but it's also things that really only small producers can do, because otherwise lawyers and licensing and all sorts of stuff gets in the way. But and so we have done this with Braxton Beer, where they've actually been making beer inspired ice cream. We tried an ice cream inspired beer, and that was no bueno. Bourbon inspired ice cream, however, is muy bueno. It's good.
I can vouch for that.
So we had a bourbon ice cream, and I was never happy with it, mainly because it was bourbon-flavored ice cream. No bourbon in it. And I didn't like it. And so we kind of got rid of it, and we were thinking about reimagining it and being familiar with New Riff Bourbon. And after we got the tour, I was like, this is just like great. They're the graders of the bourbon industry. Like, we are the ice cream of the ice cream industry. We're the small, we're craft, we're special. We pour our family passions into the stuff. So what better family to work with? And so we reached out to them, and they were like, oh yeah, let's do this. So we got the tour, and it's not just any old bourbon. We went and picked a barrel, and that was way fun. If you can do that as a customer, but went through the warehouse, picked, I think, from five or six different barrels, and we're tasting them, and everyone together came up with the perfect one. So the bourbon barrel ice cream is made with a single barrel, hand selected by us and the New Riff team, and it has bourbon in every pint. Now, you can only have up to one half of 1% and be legal. So it's more of a hint of bourbon, but people
but
love it.
But it's there.
Oh, people, they like this one so much better. And, of course, it has a chocolate chips. It's a match made in heaven.
So
absolutely.
My 10-year-old daughter can eat this?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. She asked the other day. I just need to find out.
Okay. And it did so well that just, a couple weeks ago, we had to go back and pick the second barrel because we ran out of the first barrel. And talking about the liquor laws, we actually have to bottle that barrel to take it across that wide Ohio River. We couldn't bring the barrel. We had to bottle it. So we got a few bottles, too.
So between the two families, there was no like bootlegging connections that you could just quietly get it done. No. You actually had to bottle it and do it all. Yeah.
Now, the side note of benefit of that is I have a few bottles in my collection now. And my son, Will, is 25 years old. He is a bourbon hound. He has like 90 bottles of bourbon squirreled around to the house. He's still living at home, so that gives him the budget to buy bourbon. We took him on, and he was beside himself on this tour. I'm like, I'm worried about losing him to I was like, you can't. Well, but it's just when you see it in person, I mean, I've been on a lot of distillery tours. This one's a great one.
It is a great one. I have been not on a lot, but the ones that I've been on are fairly buttoned up. Like, you know, you see the operation kind of from afar. If you take a tour at New Riff, you're invited to like stick your finger in the mash and taste it. And I was like, what? And it doesn't taste like bourbon.
And no. And
at that point, but
it's amazing
really,
to see.
And so
it makes you appreciate that it is a handmade small batch process. And most can't say that.
I love that commonality that we share, that New Riff shares with Graders. And I love that you mentioned that earlier in our discussions about small batch. You know, it's such an interesting term, right? Mm-hmm. Because you could be a distillery producing millions of barrels a year and call something a small batch.
Marketing, but yeah.
It is. And that's why we've refrained from using it on our bottles or any of our materials, to be honest. But we truly are small batch.
True.
If you really think about it, I mean, we're 30 barrels when we dump our flagship bourbon. So we really align with your craft values, even if we're both larger companies.
Craft values. Mm-hmm. And I think it almost always, there's families behind craft brands, true craft brands, always a family behind it. And if PE ever gets involved, that goes away because there are things we do, like they're using a copper still. Most are steel, I think. They're cheaper and copper will wear out faster. So it'll have to be replaced sooner. You know, people that have to make numbers for investors don't do that. Families that are looking for quality, they do that. It makes a difference.
So somehow I lucked myself into this latest bourbon barrel selection. Yes. There's a backstory there. I won't bore everybody with it. But so I was like a kid in a candy store, probably like your son, know, like because I had seen people select barrels and you don't have to be making ice cream to select a barrel bourbon. Explain how, like, if anyone listening said, you know, I think it'd be really cool to select my own barrel, have it bottled, give it away for gifts or put it in my bourbon collection or whatever. Can you explain that process a little bit?
Absolutely. Thank you for giving us the opportunity. We do. We were one of the early adopters to having a single barrel program in Kentucky, or really domestically. And we take it one step farther. We actually allow folks to not have to choose an entire barrel. You can come and choose a half or even really a third of a barrel. We started about 15 six-pack cases. But it's a great opportunity to come in with friends or, you know, commemorate a special event or for a corporate gift or for any reason, particularly if you want a special bottled product that's yours exclusively. You can come to the distillery. We take you on a tour and you're able to taste through five or sometimes even more selections to pick the one. And no one else in the world will have that barrel selection. It will be your barrel. We personalize it with a side strip on the side of the bottle, which we can include logos and things if people want to say special things. But it's really an opportunity to make something yours. And we do welcome other folks, not just for ice cream, to the distillery, to our program.
So knowing that your mileage may vary on how many bottles you get from a barrel because of evaporation and things like that, what's roughly, if you're thinking about this, how many bottles are you?
I'm very proud to announce that we just launched our six-year-old bourbon single barrel selection program. So I will give you two numbers. Our four-year-old barrel selection program, which we still do and is our regular program, we usually yields about 190 to 220 bottles after 4 years of aging. A six-year-old, and we offer both bourbon and rye selections, are generally closer to 160 to 180, 185. And that's due to what's referred to as the angel share, right?
That's
the evaporation.
40 bottles for the angels?
There are nuances depending on where it's aged in the rickhouse, right, and how hot the years were, and there are variations. So again, those are approximations, but it is interesting. The angels do drink a lot, don't they? Yeah.
So did you choose 5-2, Burl? I can't remember.
I did.
I my son had 5 down for that's. So out of the 5 samples, that's the one most of us landed on.
Well,
five
let's talk about
second.
That process. Yeah, so yeah. I'll get the conversation started here. So we do the tour, we go to the tasting room, and the New Riff team had pulled 5 barrels.
Right.
And
all from different areas of the warehouse. Yeah,
exactly.
That's how they
And I thought, well, they're all going to taste the same. It's all New Riff bourbon. It's there might be a little bit of difference, but I was worried. I enjoy bourbon, but I don't consider myself an expert taster. And I thought, am I even going to be able to distinguish between 1 through 5?
Yeah.
First takeaway, hell yes.
Yeah.
Like they were
yeah.
all so different, but we had the 5, it was a blind taste test too. So even Molly didn't know which bottle was what. And so we had the 5, we had 5 little glasses, the Glencairns, and we had the in little bottles. Drawn from each of the 5 barrels, the bourbon, and we had like a notebook. We had some guidance on help me out here.
The different flavor notes you're looking for.
Yes, to help us sort of
breathe it in.
Yeah.
And one
yeah.
other important thing I found, we had a little dropper for water.
Yes.
That made a difference. The first time through, I did straight.
Yeah.
And then I did second time through with a little drops of water. And it changed my opinion.
That opens it all up.
It really changed my thoughts.
I always refer to adding a little water to whiskey as when you aerate wine.
Mm-hmm.
So if you rotate wine in your glass, it's a similar thing where you're giving the liquid, the alcohol, an opportunity to really open up and show itself.
It does. It really does. So, all right, go ahead.
So that's what we're doing. I've described the scene. And there's 12 of us?
Oh, at least,
or 10
of them. You and your brother.
Chip, my cousin.
Your cousin Chip, sorry.
And
your dad, Ken, was there. And then, various members of the media.
Will.
And then family members.
I was on vacation. I just want to let everybody know I would have been there.
You picked the, I took your spot.
Basically. I know. Yeah. I'm jealous.
I mean, yes. Well,
sorry. We'll have
Rank
to do it again.
Rank has his privilege, right? Mm. I was thinking, but I didn't say it out loud like you did, that our task wasn't necessarily to pick the best bourbon stand alone, but to pick the best bourbon to be an ingredient in ice cream.
Yeah.
And you actually, when people were saying, one or three or whatever, and the lobbying started for 5, you basically said, do you remember what you said?
No, I had a lot of bourbon that night.
I remember what you said. No, it was it was perfect. We were all debating between 1, 3 a little bit,
one and five,
right?
Yeah, and I liked both 1 and 5. I thought 1 was my favorite, but.
I think you did say that. But then you also said, you know what, guys, we have to make sure that this is the right bourbon for the ice cream. And then we started evaluating further some of the flavors in 5, and we liked them for an ice cream.
Yeah, I think it was like unanimous by the end.
I think you were right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I think
when
Rich Grader's in the room and he's like, there's going to be like Grader's bias, right? It's their ice cream. But I wasn't going to go against you.
Well, Bourbon Boy Wonder had 5 on his top list.
Oh, your son. Okay.
Yeah.
But you said also that the flavors have to be strong enough to penetrate the cream.
The fat and knife and the cream
will definitely
cover flavors.
So I would describe five, Keith, as a very like earthy, like all your traditional bourbon flavors that people like to say, even though I'm like, vanilla, really? You know, the oak, though, you know, they were very aggressive isn't the wrong word, but it was no mistake.
Nut flavor, maybe?
Yeah, like they
were very pronounced.
Like it wasn't one of those subtle, like, oh, I can, the flavors are like this particular barrel, the flavors were bursting out.
Do you want a higher proof for something like this? Or
you know, we don't disclose proofs before bottling, actually. So that was another blind part of the tasting that we didn't share where they were aged in the Rick House, particularly. We didn't share the proof. It was really. Really blind.
Now, some of those bottles won't make it into the ice cream. Most will.
Some of that bourbon didn't even, you know, make it into the bottles.
No, we got to take a little bit home.
Yeah, and they were sealed. We didn't walk out with unsealed bottles.
They had to snap that cap on.
Snap that on.
Also, that was just a heck of a fun experience from the tour to the selection to the tasting. Back to the aquifer, where I think they made us, the bartenderess made us a paper plane, which is a really cool cocktail that comes with a little paper plane folded up as a garnish. But
with the single barrel we selected.
With the single barrel
we selected. It was made with the single barrel we selected. That
so
was
even
fun.
Less bourbon making it into the ice cream because we had to. Just a couple. Yeah. I have to say it was I thought the bourbon tasting was fun. But when I was driving home, I thought, how cool to watch two families, you know, that have brought, I would say, you know, that are contributing to the local flavor, no pun intended, of our community, getting together and doing something cool like that. That was the fun thing. Yeah. And hopefully we captured a little bit of that in this conversation. Now, our friend Tim from Graders, you know, I went to high school with Tim. He's sitting right behind us.
Who didn't you go to high school with? Every time I've...
There's always the four.
Cincinnati is a microscopic community.
This isn't from the barrel we just selected, but this is the first barrel you guys did.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have a little ice cream now.
So this is not the one that...
No.
People would buy.
Well, the first barrel was good, too. We hand selected that. Right. Come on.
But we're gonna taste it here.
So we're going to put, like, vintages on the pints.
You know, it's like collectors, right?
All right. So we open it
You have to have each one.
I was told you got to tell people how to do this. You put your hand on top. Well, that's even more sealed. And you warm up the top, and then the lid will pop right off. Okay. Why don't you use this one? Because I pre-did it for you.
Okay.
And I think the scoop is behind your laptop there.
So I'm good, because in case anyone missed that, from Rich Grader himself, we just got the pro tip on how to open your pint of Graders. Because haven't we all struggled with that frozen pint, trying to get that cardboard lid off?
Well, this one's been sitting out.
Rich just simply put his hand on top of the lid and let that warmth
about
release
15,
the lid.
15, 20 seconds, and then that lid will pop right off.
Careful.
And that's the secret.
That's okay. We can clean the table.
The secret to removing the safety seal is that's a little bit tougher, but you know that's there to make sure that it's sealed when you get it. But it is.
I think you really smell the bourbon, even before you take a taste
it. Awesome.
I love my job sometimes.
You know, I do too.
This makes great audio, isn't it? People eating ice cream.
That is excellent.
There you go.
Wow.
So.
Oh my gosh.
And this one, so we had a bourbon ball ice cream previously in Louisville. It was only in Louisville. And if you want more. And then we discontinued it.
And it was only in Louisville?
It was only in Louisville. And this was now the reimagination of it. And that's available in all Grader stores. And if you don't live around our town, you can get it online. You go to graders.com. We'll ship ice cream to anywhere in the country to you. And this flavor is on that list. And it's just, it's good stuff. This bourbon ice cream, it's fun.
Your team, I have to give them a shout out as well. Mm. The production team, Andy and Dave particularly, were so focused on quality on this thing. I mean, behind the scenes, this was almost a 2 year in the making creation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They kept coming to us with evolutions of the ice cream.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be honest, I would taste it and they would change the amount of cinnamon by, you know, a small amount, but they'd be like, we like this amount and not this amount. And they were so particular in wanting it to be absolutely perfect. And
A fantastic team at, we call the plant RGW because it's on Regina Greater Way, named after my great grandmother. And these guys, they love to do it. I mean, they're the ones that crank out the ice cream, but this is part of their job is helping experiment. We have a special little ice cream machine in a different room for them to make singular batches. And then a couple days, month or once a month, we have the tasting, and that can be brutal because you'll have like six or eight things of ice cream. It's like, oh,
it sounds terrible. Yeah.
but yeah, it's not as simple as dumping great bourbon into ice cream. You have to really craft and balance the flavors to make it work. And yeah, that's what they did with this one. And it shows this flavor is perfect in my estimation.
The balance is perfect, and the bourbon really shines through. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a lot of bourbon ball ice creams, other bourbon ice creams. This is, I'm not just saying this because you're here.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And you're here, but this is fantastic.
Yeah, other flavors, it tastes flavored, and this tastes just like what you expect.
Well, I love when you read the ingredients and you get to the bourbon, then you get the parentheses, right? Like bourbon. Well, what's in bourbon? And there it is. Corn, rye, malted barley.
Mm.
Close parentheses.
No.
That's it. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, congratulations on the collaboration.
Yeah. Thank you.
When this bottle that was just selected a couple weeks ago, how long is the production process where that will actually be in scoop shops and at your store too?
Probably this fall.
Okay.
You know, we'll just run from one end to the next. And it'll be interesting to see if people can taste the difference between barrel one and barrel two in the ice cream. Now, if they can pull that off, I'll be really impressed.
All right. Okay. On my way home, I'm stopping at my neighborhood.
Getting one and putting it to the side.
I'm going to go to the Kenwood Graders. I'm going to get, if you still have them there, a pint of, this one. And I'm going to save it till the new one comes out. And Keith and I are going to see. We'll do a blind test.
I go to Graders about three times a week because my daughter, after camp, we have to go to Graders. So I'll be at the Hyde Park or Clifton one. So, yes.
And one last thing I want to tell everybody.
Yes.
Because this is a sore point with Rich Grader.
Uh-oh.
Is that the Enquirer, for some reason,
is
blind to the fact that you guys do donuts.
We have been making bakery for 75 years.
I'm changing that today.
75 years we've been making bakery. We make the best pumpkin pie in town. The cheese crowns are amazing. We have more bakery stores than any other bakery in town.
And if you're trying to get those office donuts and you're going to the same tired places, you know, Dunkin' because it's on the way or easier, don't forget Graders has donuts.
Yeah. And you're still doing your Butterbit dinner rolls.
Oh, yeah.
Which are, when I used to come back from New York, I would just pack my suitcase with those. Uh-huh. And those are fantastic.
They're fantastic. The double butter coffee cake, people. I mean, my favorite is the king cake for Mardi Gras. Love that because I'm a sugar hound. I mean, that's the business. Yeah. So it's a sugar with sugar and icing sugar on top. You have to brush your teeth after you have a slice. But we got great bakery.
Mm-hmm. You do.
But great ice cream, too.
Agreed.
All right. Well.
Now with great bourbon.
Molly, is there anything – is there a equivalent to the donuts? Like people don't know that New Riff also does this?
Great question. We make gin.
I was going to say.
Riff makes gin. Yeah. Sure. I'm happy to talk about it.
It's gin season right now.
It is.
I'm bourbon from Memorial Day to Labor Day. No, the other way around. Labor Day to Memorial Day is bourbon season. But the rest of the summer, it's martini season, and that needs great gin.
I agree that a martini only exists if you put gin in it.
Absolutely.
We call it our Kentucky Wild Gin, and then we bourbon barrel age a gin as well. So those are really fun to play with and make cocktails. And those are probably our donut equivalent.
So that means the gin is being aged in a oak barrel that's been
dumped. We say dumped.
Okay.
A dumped bourbon barrel.
Okay. So it's literally
it's literally a barrel that we use for our bourbon or rye, and we'll age gin in it for approximately 5 to 7 months.
That is your bakery, because I did not know you had gin until I was in the store and we were picking out the bourbon barrel. Like, gin.
Yeah.
Because I'm a fan of gin, too.
Thank you.
Vodka makes no sense to me, but gin. That'll
be the quote. That'll be the quote from the podcast.
Vodka makes no sense to me.
You want a Bloody Mary that's perfect? Put gin in it.
Print the t-shirt.
We like things with flavor.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. And well, on that note, I want to thank both of you for coming in to do the podcast. And I want to apologize to any listener who is trying to stay on a strict diet and listen to this and now is rushing off to try.
Life's too short. Life's too short.
I agree.
Everything in moderation.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Rich Grader, Molly Lewis, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
This has been fun. Truly an honor.
Keith, I don't know about you, but I was today years old when I learned that there is a minimum butter fat requirement to call something an ice cream.
And I don't know about you, but I was today years old when I learned that I've been opening pints of ice cream wrong my entire life.
You know, that gave me an idea for a series we could do at the Enquirer. Like, you know, obviously we learned from Rich Grader today how to open a pint of ice cream. We should ask, you know, like officially, you know, the debate on how you're supposed to eat a three-way. Do you turn the plate like vertically or horizontal?
Whoa.
You don't know about this?
Today years old.
Didn't know about that. As our food writer, you should know. Okay.
Can we cut that part out of this?
Yeah. No. Okay. Like ask someone at Skyline how to eat a three-way, right?
We should
get other pro tips from the people who would know.
All right.
But that was pretty cool. So I had a week, Keith, full of that So Cincinnati moments because I got to watch editors like me from around the country who were in Cincinnati. The Enquirer hosted the annual Gannett editors meeting. So we had 30 people from around the country, you know, the editor of the Arizona Republic, the editor of the Nashville Tennessean, the editor that supervises all the newspapers we have in Florida, including Fort Myers and Naples and Palm Beach. And I was hell-bent on giving them a true Cincinnati experience. So we went to a Reds game. They got to try Skyline. At one of the breakout sessions, we served graders. We dispersed them to different restaurants around town. And hilariously, the chief content officer and president of Gannett, who oversees all of local news and USA Today, was here. And she was researching before she came here and read your column where you pretty much dissed all of our readers on their pizza selection.
I did not diss our readers.
You totally did.
I did not diss our readers at all.
You totally dissed our readers.
Oh, my God.
We ask our readers to pick their favorite pizzas. They do. And you look at the list and go, no, I'm going to do my own. I'm going to do my own list.
You know what?
And so she read that and she was fascinated by this. She thought this was the coolest like reader engagement thing. She told all these other editors that they need to do what we just did, which is good. I like being that, you know, that newsroom that inspires others to do great journalism like pizza. But you came out with your own list and Kristen Roberts, our chief content officer, got in town the night before and she reached out to me and said, I want to eat at one of these pizza places that Keith wrote about. So I took her to Wayfair.
Tavern in Dayton, Kentucky.
She got to see Northern Kentucky. We came across back on this side of the river over the suspension bridge. And she, like many others, didn't really know much about Cincinnati. And despite, you know, what we were reporting on, the aftermath of that fight video and the national attention it was getting, I was proud of how our city showed for all those visitors. They loved it. They thought it, you know, looking at the old German inspired immigrant architecture on both sides of the river, experiencing a Reds game, some of the local flavors. they were so impressed, so impressed with our hometown here. Little Cincinnati moments popping up all over the place.
That's great.
Yes.
That's great.
But your pizza pick, your I want to go back to that because I thought it was a gutsy move, Keith, coming out with your own list right after the readers made their list. And did you get any blowback?
No. I didn't get any blowback.
Actually, you got the opposite. I saw some very like noteworthy people in town respond to it. Kind of like a, thank God you're setting the record straight.
Well, you know, there's a lot. We've had a lot happen with pizza in this town in the past 5 years. And believe me, I love La Rosa's and I love Strong's and I love Dewey's as much as everybody else. But when I saw the list, I thought there's a lot of really great, exciting pizzerias that got overlooked here. So hence my list.
You thought, what do the readers know?
I did not.
Keith Pandolfi. Well,
people are going to cancel their subscription listening to you say this. I love you readers. I have a deep respect for all of you. Yes.
Well, it was fun. It was fun. Like I said, it gave our chief content officer an opportunity to get over to Bellevue, right?
Dayton.
Dayton. Yeah, yes. Right. Yeah.
Kentucky.
I got to get my riverfront Kentucky city.
That is the happening scene down there.
Yeah, it very much is. Very cool scene.
But did she like it?
She loved it.
Okay.
And you know what? She wanted to try something like a traditional pizza, you know. Yeah. And she also wanted to try one of their more adventurous pies. Mm-hmm. And so we got the pickle pizza.
Oh, she did text me about that.
Yeah.
She loved that.
Oh, yeah, she couldn't wait to text you. That. She was like, we're getting in the car to leave. And she's like, give me Keith's cell phone number.
And there's just nothing like being at home one night and getting a text from the COO of Gannett.
She is the chief content officer of Gannett.
You're just sitting on your sofa.
You're on her radar now, okay. Keith. That's pretty cool.
I'm glad she liked it, though.
And when the pizza came out and it had potato chips on top, I was like, ooh, this might be a little challenging. No, it worked. Have you had the pickle pizza?
I have. Very I love good. It.
It's a great alternative to a more classic pizza.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Pizza, ice cream, bourbon, mayhem on the streets. We had a little bit of everything on this podcast.
Yeah.
I think we ought to end on a high note there with pickle pizza.
Pickle pizza. Try the pickle pizza at Wayfarer Tavern.
All right. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. We'll see you next week.